Hey, welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Spotlight. This is the podcast that'll take you behind the scenes to talk with the unsung heroes who are out there working in the trenches of the music, theater, and TV worlds. Happy New Year, everyone. You want a firecracker? Well, we've got one right here in the form of Ashley Lomax, hospitality and VIP coordinator for artists like Kanye West, Slipknot, Janet Jackson, and Cher. Let's kick it off. Well, thanks everyone for checking out another episode of Beyond the Spotlight. Joining us today is someone who wears a lot of hats. She is a tour manager, a VIP coordinator. She's been a production assistant for Cher. She's worked on tours with Kanye West, Slipknot, Janet Jackson, Chris Brown. Was also the hospitality coordinator for the Big Three Basketball League, which was the league founded by Ice Cube. And she's a singer-songwriter. She's a podcaster. She's probably a million other things that we haven't gotten to yet. But please welcome to the show, Ashley Lomax.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. I love your platform. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to have you. She is joining us today from the Baltimore area of the U.S. It sounds like you're very encompassed with all things music. And was that something that was really a driving force early on for you? Did you have musical family that you grew up in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, music was I feel like a lot of things are really predetermined when you're a kid. And it was very early on that I actually liked music and I liked songs and writing and dancing and things. My dad was a drummer most of my life and pretty much before I was born in D.C. My mother has always been in like an audiophile, and my grandparents and my aunts and uncles, and they all have their own interests in music. And so I grew up in a situation of almost like, oh, did you hear the new Level 42? Did you hear this old Zeppelin remaster? Did you hear this new? So it was a environment that was very welcoming for me, and I was a big read the liner notes kind of kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So it all played into the same pot. I eventually started playing French horn as a kid, like violin and flute just weren't going to do it. And then around high school is when you really got to make the decisions. Is it going to be orchestra or is it going to be something else? And I kind of transitioned into dance and tried to figure some other things. But by the time I got out of high school, I had been writing since about 12, but I just never got the nerve to do it by myself. So as time went by, it just worked itself out that I ended up performing for about 10, 12 years independently before ever touring work-wise. Mm-hmm. So it's almost kind of been 2-3 different lives of it, but it's all been under the same umbrella, you know?
Yeah. But it's great experience because you have a much better appreciation than for artists that you're out with, you know, cause of your experience as an artist, you know, in your own right. So, it gives you a little bit more well-rounded kind of a umbrella.
I like to give people the example that I'm a child that's named after a Rush member.
Ah.
My middle name is for Alex Lifeson, and that should be proof that I'm surrounded by music fans. Of all the people you could name me or think to name me from, my aunt chose that.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. That's, I don't know too many people that are named after members of Rush.
Exactly.
You know, certainly no one named Getty anyway.
Right. I know.
It's interesting you say that because the person who introduced us, David 5-1 Norman, played drums in a Rush cover band when he was in high school, which I found fascinating and hilarious at the same time.
Exactly.
Because that would be the last thing I would have pictured. But, you know, it just shows their far-reaching effect on people and their music. And they're still doing it for the most part. So you were steeped in music. You were steeped in the respect for music and the appreciation of music, which I think is a huge thing. I mean, I've heard of a lot of people who, you know, have family that listens to music and likes music, but to really kind of wrap your lives around it and embrace it on that level, I think it transcends that and gives you a whole different understanding.
Agreed. I mean, I also have to keep in mind that where I'm from in Maryland, there's a racetrack that's been around forever that used to be a field venue. And so my grandmother, you know, would tell me stories of seeing Zeppelin and Zappa for like $3 across the street and just like take a kid, you know? And I've also had the fortune of having an aunt that toured. So it's kind of funny that there really is only two people in my mother's side of the family that really is in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. But the two that it became were the two that made sense. My aunt always had vinyl. She always had headphones. She was locked in her room listening to music. Same thing with me. So I'm very welcoming of it. I'm glad that I come from a family of like individual personalities. So grandma was like very, what do you really want to do? Like, I want to perform. Okay. And then let's go. So I think the support has made me happier to be so open-minded about something, because it's past a passion at this point. It's deeply a lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to avoid it when it gets to that level, because it's just in your DNA at that point, and it's hard to not do it.
Yeah. So
you grew up singing, writing from an early age. What was your first exposure in touring, and how did you kind of make that jump?
The first real, I went to concerts really young. So I knew about concerts. I knew I could see people on the sides. I had no clue there were people behind. My aunt pretty much went to Full Sail and then became an audio engineer over time in LA, studio manager over time. And then she jumped into touring. And so between her and some of her friends around, I don't know, I'm 12, 13, 14, I had the opportunity to really see what's on the other side of the curtain. Mm. And at that point, it's a lot of ego. You can bring your friends. They'll give you passes. I can get you in the Limp Bizkit show, like that whole thing. But then eventually that died down and it turned into, well, how come every time you come with your tour, I can't be your assistant or I can't help you? And then it just pivoted. I was like, okay, wait. Can I help you when you come into town? She's like, no, we have somebody. Okay. Can I help when you come into town? Let me go ask your friend that shows up. And it just went that way until a friend of my aunt's who was touring with the Eagles at the time, a friend of hers was working on Neil Diamond and needed an assistant for a VIP gig in DC. That was the first one I did. And I didn't know that the woman, beautiful woman, Ann Vetter, was training a lot of people for Live Nation with this VIP thing. Mm. So I kind of got it under my belt kind of randomly from my aunt being like, I don't know what this is, but you want to get in, here you go. You like people. Yeah. And that was the first gig. And it was just word of mouth from there. And I'm glad it was that organic. And it wasn't based under, oh, you're so-and-so, so we'll do this for you. It makes the accomplishments a lot more gratifying.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's good to know you earned it on your own and not through connections or favors or any of that other kind of thing that happens so much, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you got involved that way, and then I'm assuming the bug just kind of bit you, and you were like, I love being around this lifestyle, these people. Is that
it is the lifestyle, but I also have to make sure to say that I'm surrounded by a lot of adults and family members who traveled with work. My aunt traveled with touring. My mother works in the medical field and she travels a schedule like most touring people do in the bigger sense of it. So my relationship as a child to somebody that travels like that and a father who was a drummer. So my understanding of attachment, detachment, and movement, I'm not homesick. I'm not a homebody. So I didn't want to waste that. I wanted to try to figure out how to make myself happy, because everyone around me gets to travel, but it's really their profession is what got them there. So quite honestly, the VIP stuff is where I kind of got in, but it started from doing it locally and to a point that almost Live Nation couldn't ignore me was kind of the way. Because it was really small. I think that first year it might've been 4 gigs I got, but the next year I had enough time to know people to say, hey, you're coming in town. You have this gig, this leg. I'll do whatever. Then it turned into, I'll go from Maryland to Philly for it. I'll go to the Garden to Virginia for it. I'll do the whole DC to New York run for you and every city in between for continuity reasons. And it almost, quite frankly, turned into a point where they were probably giving me more money on these local checks than maybe taxing me as salary. So like, you might as well. So my first gig with, legitimately on the bus was 2015, but I had been doing local gigs at months at a time, like U2, Timberlake, Sabbath, that kind of stuff, and Madonna for like 5 years or so. So it wasn't it was just kind of, okay, I would like my expenses taken care of now. And then just work from there. And then I got in, and then my first gig was Janet as an assistant. And then not even 3 months after, I got Slipknot and Slipknot writing to Kanye, and then out the door.
Wow. Yeah. And then, once you get to that level, I'm assuming it's a lot easier to move from gig to gig and, you know, and kind of work your way through the industry.
It is, and it isn't, because it's actually a lot more people you don't know. Mm-hmm. And then I will be specific in saying that there was just certain politics and visibility or lack of representation in tours that I didn't see coming. Yeah. And so it's almost like I really didn't see a predominant tour of color fully predominantly backstage until my sixth or seventh tour. Mm. In the bigger picture. But at the same time, my first tour, my tour manager was a female. Most of the production were women. So I got the opportunity to, and I didn't think of it then as the way people say it now, like you worked three big arena acts first.
Yeah.
which when I talked to other people and I realized some really started at club runs and theater runs and got up, mm-hmm. I feel bad sometimes because sometimes when I go to a club run or something, it's such a different world for me because I'm used to something bigger. I'm used to a bigger crew. And so it almost could have jaded me.
Yeah,
if I didn't mix it up. It's one of the great things that happened was doing Slipknot and then within the next year doing Stone Sour, which is the older group of Corey's, but not as big as Slipknot. So it was going from a, you know, 10, 12 bus situation to two buses in like 13 of us and doing theaters, which was great and humbling to see an artist you like doing that for their own passion and then being a part of it because you're not thinking, you know, the Slipknot fans are coming to the Stone Sour show, but they know that they're here for Stone Sour, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'm glad I did arenas first because now immediately I was like, stadiums, what are stadiums? and now that we're in a real different honesty with what the climate is right now about things might go to theaters, things might get more smaller and whatsoever. I have to learn to be adaptable.
Oh yeah. Everybody. Yeah, for sure. That's the name of the game this year for sure. Let's pivot and try to figure out how to do something and, you know, anything at this point. I think early on everyone was under the assumption, okay, this is going to be a month, maybe two, and then, you know, we'll kind of work our way back into it. And here we are.
I was so deeply realistic at first that I felt bad sounding like I was being negative to my peers, but I just wasn't trying to lie to myself. And my logic at first was like, all right, if one person gets a cold on the bus and that'll run through a bus 4 or 5 days, no questions asked, whether one person doesn't get it or not. And that's just 10 to 12 people. Okay, let's multiply this. No. So then the logistics of certain things like, and I don't like to pop bubbles, but I do like to be kind, but I also like to be clear. So it's almost, you know, oh, you know, it's March and we'll be back at it by June. Like, no. And even if we are, people are going to turn into germaphobes and people are going to turn very different.
Yeah.
And I just felt bad for the conversations that were kind of coming up in the essence of like, oh, we'll be back in August, we'll be back in October. And early on, I was like, everyone get certifications and stuff. You have so much time to be like, I've never gardened until now because I'm never here to do
long enough,
anything like that. So somewhere in this, I'm trying to always remind myself that this was so deeply necessary for, and no one maybe wants to hear it, but 12 million people in this industry needed to hear for a second that you're more than your job and you have a whole life beyond it. Your self-worth isn't completely attached to it. Your anxieties are linked to it. And who are you if you take the money away, quite frankly, and maybe the routine? I think I tried to be good at first about being welcoming about that because I wasn't sure at first. I was like, this might wear me down. But
I think it was a good lesson for everyone, and you know, especially in the touring world, because like you said, everybody, you know, in most careers, everyone is kind of tied to what they do. You know, when you first meet someone, they say, you know, what's the first thing they say? What do you do?
What do you do?
You know, they don't say, who are you? What do you, you know, they just say, what do you do? And that's kind of how we're ingrained to describe ourselves. Mm-hmm. And in touring, it's probably even worse because you are living, breathing that lifestyle, you know, 20 hours a day sometimes for weeks and months at a time. And so it is hard to get to kind of back up and get that perspective that most people have, you know, when they get home from a 9 to 5.
We know nothing of it.
Yeah.
Nothing of it.
So it's, I'm sure it was a shock, utter shock to a lot of people just to have that abrupt stop and have to sit there and look at themselves literally and figuratively in the mirror and say, who am I? What do I, you know, what can I do? What do I do now? And,
one of my dear friends has this great statement. He's been saying it on a couple of my podcast episodes, but he always brings up when he talks to other touring professionals that what we do is kind of the equivalent of disaster relief services. And we can build, bring power, light. We'll do it in a thunderstorm, a tornado, a hurricane. Like, it's really non-excusable what we can do work-wise if we were in that type of realm. And so to get yourself in a field that's almost certain to never end, it ends because of your conduct. It doesn't end because of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then to actually have that happen, I think was a bit jarring for all demographics involved, because I've learned now 10, 12 years into something that it's a different conversation for the people 30, 40 years in. There's the few that could look at this as retirement and enjoy it. There are the few that have done this 30, 40 years and don't know anything but it. Home, partners, whatever. And then there's the people who have, you know, had their nose to the ground and been working their way up to good positions and constant positions, you know, in their late 20s, mid 30s, you know, late 30s, that are having something kind of taken away that isn't because the higher ups, the vets, aren't making room anymore. No, it's gone for everyone, plus students who are graduating at the same time trying to walk in. And I went to Full Sail. So every once in a while, I try to do what I can to speak back to students. And it's such a tricky conversation to have at this moment, because it's almost you want to discuss with me glory days, but we need to be talking about what you might walk into. One thing that most people don't know, and this is actually what's been happening the past month or two, I've been working on a production situation for the Biden headquarters in Delaware. Mm-hmm. And it came so randomly from a friend of a tour friend needed help in the area. And I was itchy because I'd just been here. So I was like, man, I will drive to Delaware. It's not far to me. I'll go further. And I think at the time they were a little concerned about the rates not being what should be, you know, what they could figure out. And I think because they knew I was a touring professional, they were just like, we don't want to dangle a carrot that we can't fulfill. And I had said, I was like, well, quite frankly, I mean, what I hear in it is that a touring professional female of color gets to see an indoor event get loaded in, upkeep and stay at the highest stake possible of not getting sick. Yeah. No, I want to see it.
Yeah, I would
like to see you do it, and I want to see you do it. That was my reasoning behind it. So periodically, I've gone up for that, which has just been comforting and wonderful to kind of have something to say to someone, like just the little examples of order of operation, just the things they've planned and how they do their testings and just all that stuff. It's been wonderful to see and be a part of, just even in a little bit, because it's something I can take to every tour I go back to, especially as a hospitality coordinator. I think I've been stressing myself about hospitality coordinator stuff, because I've been hospitality coordinator on Chris Brown for 3 years now, and Big Three two, 3 years now. And that's all going to play very different when we get back.
Well, let's kind of back up and look at what that means pre-COVID. Like what kind of duties are there for you? What does that entail as a hospitality coordinator?
It's very similar to VIP coordinator. It's just that the amount of people that you are overseeing is smaller and more detail is the way I like to look at it. So on a hospitality situation, let's use Chris Brown for an example. I take care of the catering for the principals, for the crew, bus doc after show, that situation. I also take care of the writers for the dressing rooms, for the offices, video world, front of house, all of that kind of stuff. And it's great because I like people. So for me, it's easy for me to remember who's a vegetarian, who's a pescatarian, who's on a day off, you know, changing their diet up and that kind of thing. And it's this, and it kind of transitioned well from doing VIP, because with VIP packages, most of them had some sort of party, and you know, have food, drink tickets, a bartender, that thing. It's the same catering contact at the venue. So I'd talk to you one half of the year for VIP, and then I come right back with another for dressing rooms. It's all the same relationships. So for me, it was an easy transition, and I liked being attentive and helpful in that kind of way. You know, I know what most people's favorite snacks are, or what your favorite beverage is, or, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what that entails.
Yeah. And that, you know, you mentioned knowing all those details about people and their preferences, I mean, that requires a lot of listening on your part, a lot of attention to little things that they say or hints in conversations. And, you know, it's important to those people too, to have someone as attentive as that, because, you know, it's easy to, I'm a vegan myself, it's easy to show up somewhere and people just assume that you're going to have, you know, chicken, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not always the case. So it's very refreshing to hear, you know, that people are paying attention to those things.
Yeah, I've had to learn that there are, you know, it's one thing to have vegetarian options, but what's really important is vegan options. Most vegetarians can figure themselves out, but vegans need it a certain kind of way. And I think if I can get you whatever specific beer you like, I should be able to get more people a constant vegan option that they would want more. I'm predicting that when things kind of get back to whatever our norm is going to be, that let's say on a budget, I'm now thinking about it that so many people are coming back with different dietaries. I mean, some dear people to me have been vegan this past year because they have the opportunity outside of trying to figure it out on the road and munching on things here and there. Yeah. And I as well. So it's, I'm curious to see just the politics of what that plays into. But I've learned that if you really are friends with people, not looking for something, you know, just being friends with people, you'll really figure stuff out.
Yeah.
And I think doing VIP on Chris Brown first and then coming back the next year as hospitality coordinator, it was just, okay, well, Ashley knows me well from a year ago, so I can make it work. So
yeah,
I enjoy
it. Awesome. That's awesome. Do you have any great stories, and you don't have to name any names, about just crazy things that have happened or
You know,
situations that were kind of tenuous or anything that would be of interest?
I went to Japan with a very big artist that hadn't come back there in years. And to see a fan base dressed like them, and to see the way they follow our vans and our Sprinter vans and stuff was a lot to, like, any artist would love to see it until you're in it. Like, okay, that's just way too much.
That's a lot.
but for me, a lot of the stuff that I've come across has been the tour I expected it from, but the requests were just strange. And so, you know, there was a tour I pretty much had to finagle a VIP situation because the principal just logistically pulled things away from a package already purchased. And every day I just had to problem solve. And one of the things I had to do, or what I chose to do, was to tell people like where the stage landed and lifted off. And that literally was enough of a secret for 300 people to not tell the masses when they come in to keep them from refunding tickets. It was something so random that shouldn't have mattered. And then on that same tour, people found out we had alcoholic slushy machines and people were trying to pay me $200, $300 a pop for one, which every once in a while would be tempting, but like, no, I don't even know your age. I don't know. No. But otherwise a lot of stuff's been pretty tame. I've had a couple of fans push the bus, rocks thrown to the bus in anger, you know, a couple of ruckusy patrons at festivals, that kind of deal. Only a couple. I will say though, a lot of times the only stuff that I ever, maybe I notice, but the only interesting stuff is, you know, like me being a VIP host and you looking at me, not thinking I should be running the VIP on the tour that I'm on, like that confusion.
Sure.
And then it's like, oh no, we can talk all of their discography if you want. I'll bite into you about it, but you don't see that. And that's fine. Like, I should be here.
Well, it's interesting you say that because one of our previous guests, David Norman, said a similar thing when he would get off the bus in the morning as tour manager for a major act. You know, people would assume he was either the bus driver, the security guy, or, you know, just a roadie or something, just because of his color or because of his age or, you know, whatever the circumstances. And it's sad that people go to that place first, but it's refreshing that it sounds like more and more tours are becoming more diverse and becoming more representative of the people working in the business and
let me just first say it's extremely important and very necessary because I do believe that visibility betters us all. If you see something you want to be, you'll figure out how to become it. And I think, and on some tours, I might end up at the same venue in the spring and they think I'm some random girlfriend of someone. Come back in the summer and they know I'm hospitality coordinator. Come back in the fall and think I'm some random dancer and I don't have to come in just yet. Like, and it's after a while, it gets exhausting because it's just like, I get the tropes. I understand just assumptions. You got to roll that stuff off. But I'm fortunate. I have, you know, I had a family member who toured for, you know, over a decade, 10, 15 years, and specifically with the Pussycat Dolls and then with the, really with the Eagles for some, a good amount of time. I think she kind of left around maybe after when Glenn passed, something like that. And then she left touring and went on to work for JH Audio. And so for me, I always had a female of color in the touring industry as a coordinator. You couldn't have told me that wasn't a real thing. It's what I knew first. Now, when I ended up touring and just seeing it all, it was wild. Because I was like, oh, there aren't a bunch of you like I, oh, you didn't tell me that. Okay, you know, like, oh, got it. Oh, crap. And then it made me kind of reserved. And then it made me kind of different. Because if you knew who she was, and then you'd be kind of nicer and lighter to me if you knew her. And then there's other people who know of her. And they're like, oh, you're part of her family. Well, then obviously you got to be the best. I'm like, no, there's not enough room for mistake because of the name thing. And there's not enough space to figure out your own identity because you just are thinking I'm here to do whatever womanly duty you think that is defined as, you know what I mean? So this day and age, I'm so much happier that I've been fortunate to be in production offices and on buses where there's so many women. I mean, one of the tours I was on, she used to laugh at me. I was so taken aback. We had a female rigger. I just befriended her instantly. I just was like, I want to know what you do up there. I'm so glad you're here. She just would be like, leave me alone. I'm like, no. Like, I know you're sleepy, but I have questions. So, you know, I'm fortunate that I didn't come out of the gate hesitant thinking it wasn't possible. But what it did make me do is realize that any woman that asked me anything about any of this, I will tell you instantly what it is or how to get there or whatever. It's just, it is a beautiful world. And I've learned from some production managers and coordinators who are men have said that they like women in their productions and they like women on their tours for the sake of the temperament, for the sake of just like, I just like the company of, not for anything incorrect, but they really aren't that dramatic in comparison to the way that eventually men get angry on tour, which, like I said, dealing with this person that dictates your food and your beer, I know that firsthand.
Well, and you have to be treated properly because you're dealing with their food and
I
their beer.
I take care of your food. Yeah. I take care of your beer. So
treat Ashley well.
Treat me nice. If you get me a Canada Dry, I'll get you all the beer you want.
I love it. So you've worked for some pretty big, you know, high profile artists.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you would really love to work with, like your dream gig?
Man. Who
would?
Oh, man. As time has gone by, I've realized I would give a limb to be in the Bjork camp.
Really?
Oh man, she's my favorite. Somewhere between Bjork and Radiohead. I got a lot of bucket list stuff checked out of the way a couple years ago, and that kind of incited my, I want to work on Nine Inch Nails. I want to work on Queens of the Stone Age. That, like, the stuff that I really grew up loving.
Yeah.
But if I want to do somebody's stadium. Someone's got to get me there. And that will, I feel like, always will lead me to having interest in Paul McCartney and the Stones and Guns N' Roses. But Bjork and, like, real obscure ones, like Bjork, Jamiroquai, Radiohead, I'd really get into. And on a hip hop point, Childish Gambino and Kendrick Lamar. The productions were one thing, and most of my dear friends were on both of those tours. I was so proud of them. But having, and I have to make sure to think of this way, because people look at me doing the St. Pablo tour with Kanye as the exact same thing. I mean, he's really kind of the Michael flew, Timberlake took something over the crowd, but Kanye took this stage and never dropped it. And it's 2,200 people on the floor, open floor, no barricades. It was an absolute, I mean, it looked like Blade Runner and like Close Encounters. I mean, it was stunning.
Wow.
Visually stunning what they did. And from it, you don't have Travis Scott set up. You don't have Drake's Ferrari. You don't have Kendrick's, you know, staging. And so I would like to say that there's more, but on a hip hop level, I kind of did the one that was like artistically crazy.
Yeah. You went check that one right
you
off
know?
From the get go.
Like, It's really hard to pick something in that hip hop. And I will say that as time has gone by, I know it's those bucket list feelings for me. So it's always, let me do one stadium. And I've actually never gone to Europe. I'm the tour person that's done Australia, but not Europe. So that would be the thing. I want a stadium and I want to see like the Stones in Europe. That'd be, yeah.
That would be, that would be a good one.
That'd be a great one.
Yeah. Well, you've got some good, aspirations there. So hopefully those will come true.
Hopefully
soon. Yeah. When you get back to work.
Right.
If you were looking back at your younger self, you know, let's say 16, 17 years old, just finishing high school or around that age, and you could give yourself a piece of advice to help you move forward through either your career, your life, whatever, what do you think that one piece of advice would be?
You're not as crazy as you sound. And I say that because I've sung on stage with Prince at like 19 on a random one-off. I've like been in Humans of New York and I look like a hobo. I've done an interview with Nardwuar for an artist who refused to do it. But if I ever released that footage, it would be unreal. So like the things that I've come across in the randomness of my days doesn't sound crazy to the people I hold dear. And a perfect example of that is being in the middle of a pandemic and calling your best friend and saying, hey, I got to go to Delaware tomorrow. I got like a thing at the Biden headquarters. And your best friend going, yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's totally normal.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. So for me, I think it's important to remind yourself that you aren't as nutty as you sound. And I think that's important. Oh, and the other thing I would tell myself, your public speaking skills will get you far because a lot of people are afraid to. Didn't find that out until much later because I've been an artist for so long. So, but you're not as crazy as you sound.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, so many people are hindered by their fear of things or fear of being themselves or fear of expressing themselves, and they miss a lot of opportunities or fail to really fully develop who they are.
It's painful. It's very painful. And I feel like it's painful to watch if you get the opportunity to do what you want to with yourself, actually the way you want to do it. And I think that that's what's making this, I think this time a little hard for people who tour is that you're talking to a bunch of, not just dream makers for you, but dream takers for themselves. And you just can't say to someone that doesn't go to sleep, the stress that they go to sleep with is stress that they want. Right. And you just can't tell someone find something new. You can't anyone with passion. You can't say that. That's not applicable. You're really talking Spanglish at somebody when you say it. And it breaks my heart sometimes to think that there's a lot of people that are afraid of getting out of the 9-to-5 mold, but don't realize the beauty in what you do. There's a 9-to-5 that will make you so sleepy, but your days will be gratifying for you the way you desire them. And it's hard to make someone see it because it's like, you know, you bring a friend or a family member backstage or to a show and give them that access. They're just kind of, some of them, their eyes are all aglow. But you don't realize, like, sometimes I've said to people, like, you know, you can get that same feeling if you do that thing you told me you wanted to do last year, like that. Yeah. I'll come visit you and that will be me because I have no concept of what this means to you, but you got there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think you got to be an example for people. It's deeply, deeply important. My nieces and nephews got the cool on and I'll take that.
Yeah. Well, you had one. So right. She showed you the way. And so you're passing it on.
You have to pay it forward. It's deeply important. I don't know where I'd be if I didn't. And she never told me you could do it. She was just doing her own thing. I was like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. She led by example.
Yeah, she was on my first tour as my road manager. I didn't know and she didn't know. And I got my credential and she's like, all right, well, you're C party and you have a good tour. And that was it.
That was it. Wow. That is awesome. Well, Ashley, thanks so much for, you know, taking some time to tell us your story, your journey, all your experiences. Where can people follow along with you online?
Yeah, if you go to Instagram, the easiest way is the Ashley Alexander, and that will also link you to the YouTube channel, which is Ashley Alexander TV. If you're looking for the fun Instagram page, it is Bat Buddha, like Bat like Batman and Buddha like Buddha. I have this little figurine that travels with me on tour, and he has met way more people than I have, and he's way more popular than I'll ever be, and he has a page of all of our touring travels.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. I love that. All right. We'll put those in the show notes so people can follow along and click through to those and see what Ashley is up to next.
Because
it sounds like you're going to rule the world here. So I'm anxious to see the next things that come along for you.
I'm trying. I'm bored and studying the LSAT. So we're going to up the ante soon and see what we're doing.
Anything to get out of that.
Right. Well, thank you so much, John, for the time. Really, your platform is incredible. I've been following and sharing and all that good stuff. Please, please keep this up.
Thank you.
We really need each other to have these dialogues and to see each other have them and see faces. I like to remind people that sometimes it's important to hear the voice of an old tour friend. You can't see them yet, but it's great to hear them talk and laugh, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me because, you know, I started this thing just kind of as a selfish little experiment to see, you know, I was interested in a lot of these things. I know a lot of people who are in touring. And so I knew a little bit about it, or I knew a fair amount actually, you know, compared to most people, but I always was interested to know more and hear some different kind of views of things from different areas that I wasn't familiar with. So I just decided to do it. And, you know, if people found it interesting, that was great. And now almost a year later, it's starting to get a little traction.
That's awesome.
And I'm really thrilled that people are, you know, as excited about it as I am. So hopefully it'll
well, when I get the podcast interviews back up and running, I have to interview you on mine.
That would be awesome.
I was going to say, how often do you get interviewed for how much you interview?
Never.
Okay.
So far. Yeah. Never so far. Okay. But I would love it. Yeah. Please
right
let me know when you get going. Well, thanks again. It has been a pleasure and just an honor to talk to you and hear about all the things Ashley Lomax. So please be safe and we'll look for you out there on the road. And thanks everyone for tuning into another episode of Beyond the Spotlight. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Spotlight. If you like what you heard, please share the show with your friends. Know someone who'd make a great guest? Get in touch through our Facebook page or email us at beyondthespotlightpodcast@gmail.com. And however you download or stream this, hit subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. I'm John Diener, and this has been Beyond the Spotlight.